Chapter 11. Meg tore herself from sleep, gasping and half sobbing. She sat up, startling moonshine on his bed under the open window. He whined softly. She looked around the room, and the familiarity of her surroundings pulled her fully awake. She shivered as a breeze from the window slid over her sweat-drenched skin. She flung the sheet off in spite of the chill and swung her legs over the side of the bed and sat like that for a long time, the dream replaying itself in her mind. Gina dressed in the black shirt from the video she had sent, standing in a crowd at what might have been a marketplace. Meg had to tell her something, had to warn her about something, but she wasn't sure what. She raced through narrow, twisted streets that doubled back on each other. Every time she was sure she was about to break free of the city, she instead ended up at another blank wall or a new street. The faster she ran, the farther away Gina seemed, and then suddenly she was in the marketplace, and Gina wasn't there, and the place was engulfed in chaos, and a robed man came up to her and tugged on her sleeve. He was trying to tell her something, but she didn't understand his language, so he pulled her to a spot on the buckled flagstones where Gina's shirt lay. And in the dream, Meg started screaming and she collapsed, falling palms down onto the street, and she clutched Gina's shirt and howled in anguish as the man kept trying to tell her something. He kept touching her gently on her shoulders and back, saying something that sounded melancholy, like a song of grief. He tried to pick her up, but she couldn't move, and Gina's shirt was knotted in her fists, and pain ripped through her until she finally woke up. "Fuck," she said, and her voice sounded shaky even to her. Moonshine's clammy nose pushed against her bare leg, and she automatically stroked his head and scratched his ears.
"Just a nightmare, buddy. That's all it was."
She glanced at the clock on the bedside table. 5:13. She petted Moonshine for a long time before she stood. Vestiges of the dream remained raw in her thoughts, and she knew she wouldn't be able to sleep anyway, so she turned on the light and went down the hall to her bathroom. She stood under the shower. The water turned as hot as she could stand it, trying to wash the dream away. Once dressed, she called Moonshine, and at the steps she picked him up and carried him downstairs, where she set him carefully on the ground. He followed her to the kitchen's back door, but he didn't go in. Meg entered, and Alice looked up from the counter where she was slicing fruit. Meg heard Sheila and Tina in the dining room, probably setting up for the breakfast buffet.
"Morning," Alice said. "Coffee's on."
"Thanks."
Meg poured herself a cup, didn't bother to add anything. She sipped.
"What's going on? You look like you've seen a ghost."
Alice's brow creased.
"Something like that."
Alice watched her for a moment, but when Meg didn't elaborate, she went back to slicing bananas.
"Do you believe in dreams?" Meg asked after a while.
"The kind you have at night?"
"Yeah."
Alice shrugged, eyes on her work.
"As fortune, no. As indications that you're working on some things, yes."
"So you don't think they necessarily foretell things that are going to happen?"
Alice stopped and looked over at her, puzzled.
"It's not happened to me, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen to anyone else. I think of them as things that you need to process that are moving through."
Meg nodded slowly and took another sip of coffee. In the early morning light, here in the kitchen, the ragged edges of her nightmare dulled.
"Bad dream?"
"Yeah, just a dream, though."
She topped off her cup and started toward the dining room so she could eat with the hands and Stan. But she stopped and went back over to Alice.
"Thanks," she said. "And thanks for another awesome birthday dinner."
She kissed Alice on the cheek, then pushed through the swinging door into the dining room. Phil arrived after Meg had finished. He joined her after he piled a plate with biscuits, gravy, eggs, sausage, and bacon. He had a glass of orange juice with him. "Hungry?" she asked innocently. He grinned.
"A little. Altitude, I guess. Clean air."
"I've heard that about Wyoming. Did you get a chance to talk to my dad?"
"I sure did," he said between bites. "Great guy. He gave me some names and contact info. I'm feeling pretty good about things because I do have capital and I do have contacts."
"When's the big move?"
"Probably the end of July."
"That's coming up." He nodded and swallowed.
"Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, actually."
He shifted his gaze to her face.
Sometimes I feel like I can't breathe back there. I can't be who I want to be. I can't hang out with who I want. I can't love who I want.
He paused.
That must be sort of what it's like for you, except I don't have to deal with the gay thing.
Quite a bit. But I think things will be better for you and Alicia in Denver. Hold on, let me get you a business card. She stood and went through the kitchen out the back door, where she retrieved a card from the visor pocket of her truck. She returned and handed it to Phil. My email's on there. Drop me a line. I'm working on a business plan of my own, and I could use all the help I can get.
What kind of business?
My own practice.
That's great. And yes, I think I can help you out. A couple of my dad's friends are vets, and I worked a little bit with one when he was just starting out.
That's excellent news for me. And if you need anything when you and Alicia get out here, drop me a line or call. I've got contacts in Denver. He smiled up at her.
That's really nice. Thanks.
He set the card on the table and took his wallet out of his pocket.
Here's mine. The phone number and address will change, but my email address won't. I'd sure like to bring Alicia up for a few days when we get out here.
We'd love to have you. Meg took his card and slipped it into one of her shirt pockets. He put hers in his wallet and returned the wallet to his pocket. She sat down just as her mother made her entrance. Here we go, she said under her breath, and Phil stifled a laugh as Irene beelined for their table.
Oh, how lovely to see you two here this morning.
She didn't say together, but Meg knew that's what she meant. Hi, Mom. Grab something to eat.
Hi, Mrs. Bard.
Well, I will.
And she swept off to the buffet table. Today's outfit consisted of a denim skirt with ruffles, a red form-fitting blouse with pearl snaps, and blue cowboy boots that Meg knew had never seen the light of day before now. Irene returned with a plate once again marked by a small portion of fruit, one sausage, one piece of bacon, and one pancake. She set it down along with a small glass of apple juice.
So, how are you two?
I'm fine. I can't speak for Phil, though, Meg said.
Good, he said. Had a great time yesterday. I might go for a quick ride this morning with Jake.
Irene's fork paused at her lips.
Are you going, Meg?
Nope. I was hoping that maybe you'd go for a ride with me, though. Irene's eyes widened. She finished the bite and chewed slowly before swallowing.
I don't know.
Why not? Dad tells me you were a hell of a horsewoman. He says I must have gotten some of it from you. Irene blushed.
He said that?
She nodded. So how about it? We never really get to spend time together. A ride for old time's sake?
I'll think about it.
Meg knew she'd say no. Irene always said no to situations that put her one-on-one in person with her daughter. But at least Meg had tried and extended the olive branch. She stood. I think it'd be fun. I'll be over at the paddock. Phil, when do you have to leave? He looked up at her.
We should probably get on the road after lunch.
She glanced at her mother. See? Plenty of time.
All right, I'll be around.
She took her cup into the kitchen and left through the back, where she inhaled deeply and let her gaze roam the eastern medicine bows. The dream had settled somewhat, but now she was dealing with an inexplicable urge to call Gino's parents. What would she say? Hi, Mrs. Morelli, this is Meg. I know you haven't heard my voice in years, but I had a really fucked up dream about Gina and I just wanted to make sure she's okay.
Although of anyone, Marcella would probably understand.
She still wore a necklace that was supposed to ward off the evil eye. She caught herself. She'd just email Gina when she got home and thank her for the video. And Gina would respond in a day or two, maybe more, and include a story about something funny that happened on one of her journalism meetings, and everything would be fine. Meg chewed her lip, thinking, what would it hurt to call? She could use it as an excuse to see if Gina had a mailing address overseas or something. Mary knew that she and Gina were talking a bit more, and she'd probably told her parents, or Gina had, so it wouldn't be that weird. She started walking toward the paddock. She'd think about it later. Right now, she had to get through the morning with Irene. True to form, Irene didn't get around to riding with Meg. In fact, she had packed up quickly, just as desperate to leave as Meg was to have her gone. Meg chatted with Phil as he loaded the car, then shook hands and wished him luck. Irene managed to hug her briefly before she sank gratefully into the passenger seat.
Meg and Stan watched the car ease up the one-lane dirt track that linked the ranch to the county road, and Meg felt kind of bad for Phil, because Irene would want to know what he thought of her daughter, and push to find out if maybe this was the man that would finally turn Meg straight.
"There but for the grace of God," Stan said quietly.
"I tried."
"You did. Not your fault. If she won't meet you halfway, nothing you can do about it. Sorry, hon."
She shrugged. "It's not your fault either."
"Might be. I married her."
She snorted a laugh and followed him to the office. By 3 o'clock, she and Moonshine were on their way back to Laramie. She thought about the dream, but the rhythms of daily life at the ranch had helped the images fade. The urge to call Gina's parents was stronger, however. She could use that address claim she'd thought about. She pulled up in front of her house and helped Moonshine out before she retrieved her backpack from the floor of the passenger side and locked up. Moonshine waited for her on the porch, wagging his tail.
"I hope we can get a few more years out of you, buddy," she said as she let him in and followed him through the kitchen.
She let him into the backyard, then sat on the couch with her phone and started punching the phone number in for Gina's parents. She had never put it in her phone because it felt kind of weird, since they were her ex's parents, and it had been a long time since she'd spoken to them. In spite of that, she had the number memorized. She stopped dialing halfway through. This was stupid. She pressed end, but thought about the dream and started punching numbers again, then sat nervous, drumming her fingers on her thigh, thinking about what she'd say. One ring, two, three.
"Hello?"
Luisa, Gina's grandmother, answered. That was unusual. Generally, she stayed on the farm.
"Hi, Mrs. Giordano?" "Yes, yes. Who is this?"
she asked in her heavily accented English. "It's Meg. Meg Talmadge." Long pause, then,
"Meg? Dr. Meg?"
Meg smiled. "Yes." Luisa let loose a volley of Italian, but it wasn't directed at her. Instead, she seemed to be talking to someone else in the room, and her voice increased in volume, confused. Meg held the phone a little away from her ear.
"Hello, Meg?"
"Yeah."
"It's Mary. Oh my God, I cannot believe you called. Did you get my email?"
"With the file Gina sent, yes."
"Oh my God, no, not that one. I couldn't find your phone number. You don't know."
Her voice choked with tears and ice suddenly clogged Meg's throat. "No, what? What's going on?" Mary inhaled.
"Gina, she was—" Mary took a deep breath. "She was injured in a bombing yesterday."
Meg sat stunned, but couldn't find the words to respond.
"We don't know much except that she's alive, and the people she was with got her to a doctor really quickly."
Mary's voice shook.
"What happened?"
she managed to ask, her voice harsh. Mary drew a shuddering breath.
"The first news reports are out. She was getting ready to go to Italy, and they were driving to the airport. There was an earlier incident on the way, so they were rerouted, but because they're reporters, they stopped to get a story. I'm so fucking pissed about that,"
she said with frustration.
"And apparently, as they got closer to the scene, another bomb went off. They weren't too close, but close enough. Fortunately, nobody in their group died, but a couple of them are seriously injured from flying debris. We don't know specifically what happened to Gina. Her boss called. He said that the blast was strong enough that it knocked her against a car. Thank God she wasn't closer than she was. As it was like a high wind pushed her off a wall. They don't think anything's broken, but they're not sure. Two of their cameramen got to her and got her out of there."
Meg was biting her lips so hard she tasted blood. The thought of Gina, beautiful, vibrant Gina, tossed through the air and slammed against a car made her physically sick.
"Where is she?" "Her boss said she's stable enough to travel, and she's going to the base in Rammstein, Frank's station there, and he'll be able to go to the hospital and let us know more."
"Oh my God," Meg whispered. "I don't know what to say."
"She's alive, and that's what matters. Her boss said that as far as he knows, none of her injuries were life-threatening, but they will put her out of commission for a while."
She said something in Italian to someone else in the room.
"Mom wants to talk to you,"
she announced suddenly. Meg waited while Mary transferred the phone.
"Meg?"
"Hi, Mrs. Morelli. I don't know what to say or do."
"You did what you needed to do. You called,"
Marcella said firmly.
"We'll let you know what happens. What's your phone number?"
Meg automatically rattled off her cell phone number. She then provided her landline as well. Marcella repeated the numbers back to her,
Very good. Meg, it's good to hear from you. You've been a stranger much too long. I know Gina wants very much to see you. Please don't wait for events like this or holidays to contact us.
She laughed, but it sounded forced.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Morelli, she said, feeling like a little girl who'd been caught doing something her parents had told her not to.
Marcella! Meg, how long have you known us? Marcella!
Yes, Mrs. Marcella.
Good. We'll call you with news as we get it.
I don't care what time it is. Just call me, please.
Something in Meg's voice must have triggered something in Marcella, because she softened her boisterous, brittle tone.
She's alive, Meg. Our Gina is alive. Let's be thankful for that.
Tears rolled down her cheeks.
Okay, she managed.
Now go about the business of your evening. We'll let you know,
Marcella said, not unkindly.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. I'll give you back to Mary. Bye now. Meg?
Mary asked. Yeah? It's okay.
Someone will call you as we find stuff out. She's on her way to Rammstein, and she was stable enough to fly, so that's good.
All right. Thanks, Mary.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Meg hung up and stared at the blank screen of the TV. She wiped out her tears and used the remote on the coffee table to turn it on so she could flip to CNN. 20 minutes later, news about the bombing in Istanbul appeared on the screen. 3 people dead, scores of injuries, including 5 American journalists. Photos flashed on the screen. 3 men, 2 women. An older photo of Gina appeared. Her hair was much shorter and she was wearing sunglasses. CNN didn't know much about the injuries. Instead, the announcer said that the bombing was potentially the work of some terrorist organization, loosely linked to a larger one, that might or might not have been Al-Qaeda. Meg made a disgusted noise in her throat and went to her office to see if she could find any other news on the web. As she read the emerging reports, she began making phone calls, needing to feel as if she was doing something, as if she was coping. Gina was alive. That was all that really mattered. Chapter 12. With almost physical effort, Meg focused on work the next day, on the fact that animals and their caretakers needed her. She finished another cat vaccination and stood at the receptionist counter staring blankly at the appointment book. For the 1,000th time, she glanced at the clock above the door into the back. She wasn't sure why. Watching it wasn't going to change anything or make Mary call her with an update. She picked up the clipboard by the phone and looked at the schedule to see what her next appointment was, but ended up staring at the sheet without reading it. She went into the back to check on animals. A few minutes later, Sandra, Kelly, Nicole, and Gary appeared from the front, Sandra carrying a chocolate cake with candles blazing. Kelly held paper plates, napkins, and plastic forks. "Happy birthday, Doc T," they said in unison. She'd forgotten her birthday.
Wow, thanks.
"Think you can blow all those out?" Ginny asked innocently. "I know sometimes you're capable of a lot of hot air, but..."
She looked at the cake with mock skepticism.
"Hot air, huh? How's this for some hot air?"
She leaned in and blew all the candles out.
"Good thing your lung capacity hasn't diminished with age," Ginny teased.
Sandra set the cake down, and Ginny cut into it with a bread knife she must have brought from home, creating uniform wedges. "Maybe you should be doing the surgery around here," Meg said as Ginny handed her a plate with a piece of cake on it. She smiled and Meg took a bite.
"Wow! This is excellent. Another one of your creations?"
"Dang right," Gary said. "Ginny should open a bakery, too."
He took the piece Kelly handed to him.
"We'd all go."
Sandra took a piece and returned to the front.
"Ah,"
Mark said as he emerged from one of the patient rooms.
"You're finally 21. Congrats."
Nicole handed him a plate and he took a bite of cake.
I'd know one of Ginny's cakes anywhere."
The phone rang, and a few seconds later, Sandra appeared in the doorway.
"Your dad," she said to Meg. "Couldn't get you in your cell."
She set her plate down and picked up the receiver on the wall phone in the back.
"Hey, Dad."
"Happy birthday, hon," he sang in fake lounge singer's voice.
She laughed. "Nice. Maybe you should bail on Wyoming and try a whole new career in Vegas." She leaned against a nearby counter.
Not sure the crowd would like my singing as much as the cows, and that's a stretch. So, how are you?
She knew what he meant. She looked over at Ginny.
So-so.
Have you heard anything?
He asked, concern rippling through his voice.
No.
She sighed and sank her free hand into one of the pockets of her lab coat. But they'll let me know.
Shit, hon. That's a pisser. You want me to come down for a couple of days?
She smiled. That's a great offer, but I think I'll be okay. There's nothing you can do, nothing I can do, but I'll let you know when I hear anything. He was quiet. Really, it's okay. Don't worry about me. And don't worry about her. Mary and Marcella said that her injuries aren't life-threatening, but they'll know more once she gets to Germany.
Okay. Keep me posted.
Will do.
She pushed off from the counter.
Love you. Do something nice for yourself for your birthday, hon.
Like maybe use that gift certificate you got me to Jeffrey's? She asked, smiling.
Maybe. Just take care of yourself and call me any time.
He sounded worried in a way that Meg hadn't heard since she'd been bucked by a horse as a teen and ended up in the Laramie Hospital for observation.
I will. Love you too.
All right. Happy birthday, and I'll catch up with you later. Bye.
Bye.
She hung up and replaced the phone on its receiver. Ginny scrutinized her with an expression that was a mixture of concern and puzzlement. Meg picked up her plate. Do you have some time after work?
I do now.
Join me for a beer? Ginny smiled.
So the cake wore you down, did it?
She took a bite.
God, that's good. I think, though, it's the way you use that knife.
She smirked as Ginny gave her a severe look.
Eat more cake, Meg said to the techs. That's an order. And say pieces for Randy and Roy. Oh, and Kevin and Rick.
She finished hers and Ginny cut the rest of the cake into smaller sizes.
Thanks,
she said as Ginny cleaned up, brisk and efficient.
You're welcome. And sometimes it helps to get other perspectives. You want to meet at Lovejoy's?
Meg nodded. Sounds good.
She thought again about Gina. 10 years ago today, holding her close and singing softly in her ear. The warmth of her skin on Meg's, the culmination of a week of wanting. Or maybe it was the beginning of something way beyond a summer wish. She glanced up as her 2:45 appointment arrived, relieved for something else to focus on, something she understood, that utilized her skills and training and left her heart unscathed. She settled into the rest of the afternoon and finally found some comfort in work. Meg glanced over at Haley as they rode in companionable silence Tuesday morning. Moonshine lay on the bench seat between them, his head on Haley's thigh, and a look of utter canine contentment on his face. Haley stroked his head as she stared out the window. Meg wasn't much for talking first thing, and she figured Haley might be the same. But this was a business trip, and she wanted Haley to get familiar with the people out here. Any one of them could prove an ally or future letter of recommendation.
First stop is the Johnston spread, Meg said. They've got a horse with what appears to be a mild case of the heaves. I'm being conservative with treatment, and the sample of mucus I took tested negative for infection.
We had a horse with that. We caught it before it got too bad. Moved her stall and wet her hay a lot.
Meg nodded. I want to check, too, and see if there's anything else in the stalls that might be irritating his airways. Meg turned into the Johnstons' long driveway. You want to have a look in the stable in a bit? See what you think?
Okay,
she sounded surprised. Don't worry, I'll back you up. Meg said with a little smile as they pulled up in front of the Johnstons' barn. She and Haley got out, leaving Moonshine to sit on the seat and watch through the window.
Hey, Doc,
Effie said by way of greeting.
Morning. This is Haley Roberts, our new intern.
Hi.
Haley shook Effie's hand.
Roberts,
Effie said slowly.
From the Lazy R&T?
Yes, ma'am.
You're one of Jack Roberts' daughters, she said with a smile. How's your mom?
She's good, thanks. I'll tell her you said hi.
Effie beamed.
You do that. Haven't seen much of her. Lord knows we're all busy.
She turned to Meg.
Okay, Doc. Hank's waiting for you.
I'm sure he is. She followed Effie, Haley right behind her. And I'm sure he's been looking forward to this all week. Effie chuckled.
Hey, Hank,
Meg said to the old gray who stood looking at her with a mixture of what might have been patience and caution. He snorted, a tiny bit of mucus clinging to his left nostril. Meg examined it and had Haley have a look, too.
It's better than last time. How's his appetite? Meg asked Effie.
About what it should be.
You still feeding him chest high?
Yep. And I wet his hay and bedding just a little bit to keep dust down.
Good. That's probably going to be standard procedure with him from here on out. Is he getting out? That's important.
Most of the day.
Good. If he starts having issues again, you might try feeding him pellets instead of hay, also moistened. But see how he's doing with the hay over the next couple of weeks. How are his spirits? Effie smiled.
I think he's feeling better. He's been trotting a little, more like his old self.
Meg looked over at Hank.
You look better, she said to him. He gave her another snort. Let me check the rest of you.
She motioned for Haley to watch, and Hank stood quietly as Meg examined his eyes, ears, and then carefully had a look at his teeth.
Looks good, she said,
before she checked his legs, feet, and belly.
Thanks, Hank.
She patted his neck, and Haley did too.
He seems to be doing all right, Meg said to Effie.
Call me if anything changes.
Thanks, Doc. How about some coffee?
Haley looked at Meg hopefully.
Sure, if it's no trouble.
Already made. Come on in.
After they'd each had a cup, Meg checked the stables with Haley, and then they were on the road again, headed for the Hanover spread to check on some cattle pink eye and a couple cases of foot rot. Two stops later, they finished up and headed back to the clinic. Meg glanced at her watch. Nearly 5. They'd been on the road since 7:30 that morning, and Haley had proven adept at dealing with not only animals, but people. She worked like Roy in a way, sort of quiet but dependable. The day kept Meg's mind off Gina, fortunately, but another evening at home would give her plenty of time to think about her and worry, regardless of how little good it did.
So you're in town for the summer? Meg asked, as much to draw Haley out as to distract herself from thoughts of Gina.
Yeah, easier to get to school. And I take classes in the summer.
She nodded. Good idea. Get as much knocked out as you can.
She steered onto Highway 34 toward 287.
You help out at home still?
Haley didn't respond right away. When she did, she kept her gaze straight ahead.
I used to, not so much anymore, she said tightly.
Trouble at home, Meg guessed.
Busy with school, huh?
Something like that.
She lapsed into silence, and Meg didn't push her further until the outskirts of Laramie.
I have to go out again on Thursday. You're welcome to come along, especially since your first class hasn't started, so your mornings are free.
Haley looked over at her, an expression of hopeful anticipation.
That'd be cool.
All right, same time Thursday morning.
So is there anything in particular you want to be researching for your class? That way when cases come up, I can call you, and you can come have a look if you're able to.
She smiled tentative.
I'm actually kind of interested in those cases of equine VSV that showed up in Cheyenne. I kind of wonder if maybe earlier cases of foot and mouth might actually have been VSV.
Meg nodded thoughtfully.
I'll have Ginny look up cases of foot and mouth locally, and we can see what we can see. I don't think we've had any VSV here in Albany County, but I'll check with Roy.
How far back do you want to go?
10 years.
Shouldn't be a problem.
I have a friend from vet school who practices in Cheyenne. I can put you in touch with him, unless you already have a contact.
Meg slowed down at a light.
I do, but the more the better. That'd be really great.
No problem.
Meg steered into the parking lot at the clinic and pulled the truck into its space. Moonshine sat up and stretched. Meg turned the engine off and pulled her visor down. She and Roy kept business cards in the pocket. She pulled one of hers out and reached for the pen that she and Roy kept jutting up from the unused ashtray. She wrote an email address and a name on the back and handed it to Haley.
That's my contact in Cheyenne.
Thanks. Oh, that reminds me, Meg said. One of my friends who went to CSU with me works out of a clinic in Fort Collins. She told me to pass her name along in case you wanted to spend a day or two down there. She does large animal medicine as well, and could probably hook you up with some foot and mouth cases down there, maybe even some VSV. I have some of her cards in my truck. Let me get you one.
Cool,
Haley said as she opened her door and got out. Moonshine stood up, moved over to her, then she picked him up and set him on the ground. Meg smiled and went to her truck. She opened the passenger side and pulled one of Sean's cards out of the glove compartment. She walked it back to Haley.
Here you go, Sean Miller. Her email's on there.
Tell her I sent you. This is great.
Haley read the card and carefully slid it into the breast pocket of her blue plaid Western shirt.
So we're on for Thursday? I'm a little crazy with rounds this week. It's not usually like this, but I'm working some slots for Mark.
Oh, totally. 7.
Yep. And you let me know if there's anything specific you want to check out. In the meantime, I'll just keep hounding you to watch various procedures and do the boring stuff like filing so you get a full picture of vet life.
Cool. Appreciate it, Haley said.
No problem. You good to go? She hesitated, a bare fraction of a second. But in that pause, Meg knew that she wanted to open up a bit more.
Yeah, Haley said. See you tomorrow.
She turned and headed to her own truck. Meg watched her get in and start the engine. She waved, and Meg waved back before she looked down at Moonshine as he scratched his ear with his strongest hind leg. She patted his back before she left him sitting in the sun so she could finish organizing the vet truck. She transferred her flannel shirt, coffee travel mug, and hat to her own truck. Moonshine ambled over and waited for her to lift him in. She grinned as she did so. Spoiled beast, she muttered, laughing softly. She got him settled and went around to the driver's side. She checked her email on her phone, but there were no messages from Mary. Meg sighed and backed out of the parking space. Maybe Mary would call or email later, although maybe no news was good news. She pulled out of the parking lot, thinking about Gina and the things she wished she'd said 8 years ago. Her phone rang as she pulled up in front of her house.
Hey, she answered.
Heard anything? Sean asked.
No, not yet. She braced the phone on her shoulder and against her ear and got Moonshine out of the truck.
I'm sure they're just waiting for a transport, or she's already there and she's getting looked at.
Yeah, but Meg wasn't convinced. She took Moonshine inside and let him out the back.
They'll call. So how about you come down here for dinner tomorrow? Take your mind off things?
Okay, I'll come down after work. She wasn't sure she was in the mood for it, but it was probably a good idea. Otherwise, she'd just rattle around in her house, staring at the phone or checking her email obsessively.
That's what I like to hear. We'll decide where to go when you get here. Unless you just want a liquid dinner, in which case Ted can make a mess of margaritas.
She laughed. That doesn't sound half bad, but I have to drive home.
Okay, one margarita, and then I'm cutting you off.
Thanks for looking out for me.
Who said anything about that? I just want your share of the margaritas,
Sean said with a giggle.
Oh, thanks, bestest friend.
She leaned back against her counter.
Don't worry. You'll get my share another time. And now, more importantly, how are you holding up?
Okay, still worried, Meg sighed. I know there's nothing I can do and worrying is stupid, but it's hard not to.
Yeah, it is hard not to. But it seems to me her family will let you know when she's settled in at Ramstein and they'll tell you how things are going with her.
I know, but it still doesn't help much. I'm not even sure why I'm driving myself crazy with this waiting shit.
Hello? Because you care about her?
Sean said in one of her duh tones.
You'd better have your phone grafted to your head if something like that happened to me. Hell, you'd better have Ted grafted to your head if that happened to me, so the two of you could freak out together.
Meg laughed. I don't think I'm okay with that image.
Okay, whatever. Point being, you care about her, and you had some crazy-ass dream, and it made the whole thing even weirder and scarier than it already is.
I guess. I'm still not sure what to do about that dream.
What's to do? You had a weird dream. You were thinking about her anyway, and you can't tell me you weren't worried that something could happen to her over there. It was just coincidence that you had a dream like that around the time something like that happened to her.
That's not very romantic of you, Meg teased. You're supposed to say I have some kind of connection with her, another cosmic woo-woo stuff.
There's nothing romantic about what happened, Sean said serious. And you do have a connection with her. It's just that I don't think a dream is indicative of that. Dreams come from your brain. You manufactured it.
Meg didn't respond, thinking about how she had felt compelled to call Gina's parents.
But I do think that a dream can make you realize some things, Sean said. You had already been thinking a lot about her, and you've been trying to figure out whether you want to approach her and what role you want her to play in your life. A dream like that? Maybe it made you realize that you shouldn't put off certain things. And if you're going to connect with someone, no matter in what capacity, you'd better get to it.
So you're saying the dream was a subconscious kick in the ass?
Could be. Could also be a kick in the ass to make you really think about her and what you want to do with this reestablished communication. In other words, unpack your baggage, girlfriend.
You're a hard ass.
Not as hard as you are on yourself,
Sean said, and Meg heard warmth in her tone.
So text me or call before you leave so I know when to expect you. Will do. Oh, our new intern will probably be contacting you about equine VSV.
Cool. How'd she do this morning? Did she manage to horse whisper as well as dog whisper?
She didn't have to, Meg said. We didn't have any nutty horses to deal with, but she has a nice bedside manner with both animals and people.
I'll tell her she's welcome to come and spend a day with me. After all, I have all kinds of wisdom that you don't.
Oh, really? And what kind of wisdom is that?
The woo-woo kind. I'll get my cow crystals out,
Meg laughed. I don't even want to know what the hell those are.
Probably for the best, but they're full of woo-woo.
They're full of something, Sean giggled.
Okay, I've got to run along. Talk to you tomorrow.
She made kissing noises.
Bye.
Meg smiled and hung up. Moonshine came in from the backyard and stared mournfully at his empty food bowl, then up at her. She laughed.
Okay, okay.
Dinner time. She picked up his bowl, put kibble in it, then opened a can of high-grade dog food. She added a few spoonfuls to his kibble, mixed it up, and set it on the placemat near the back door where he ate. He sniffed it and, apparently pleased with the selection, started eating with gusto.
Well, I'm glad we met with your satisfaction, sir, Meg said as she watched him.
She left the back door open for him and went to check her email again. Still no news. So she made a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for dinner, then worked on a paper she was co-writing with colleagues. At 10, she decided she was tired enough to sleep, so she checked email one more time. Seeing nothing new, she shut her computer down and got ready for bed. Maybe tomorrow would bring news. Chapter 13. Wednesday morning kept Meg busy with scheduled appointments and an emergency that thankfully turned out not to be serious. She ducked into her office at 12:30 to eat her sandwich. Kelly poked her head in 5 minutes later and asked about a scheduled change in her appointments. Meg okayed it, then checked her email. Still nothing about Gina. She finished her sandwich and leaned back in her chair, her feet on her desk brooding, when her cell phone rang. She recognized the area code as one from California.
Hi, Meg Talmadge, she answered in case it was a professional colleague, though she hoped it wasn't.
Hi, Meg, it's Mary.
Hey.
She took her feet off her desk and waited, attentive.
Gina's at Ramstein. She got there last night. Frank said he'd call us later with more details since they're about 8 hours ahead.
How is she?
She's Gina, fortunately, Mary said with a laugh. Conscious and a little cranky from the pain meds, Frank said. But she wanted to know if she could get room service. She wanted tiramisu.
Meg grinned, relief making her want to cry again.
That's good news.
Yes, we'd have to worry if she didn't say things like that. And she asked about you.
Oh?
She tried to determine a meaning behind Mary's words, but couldn't detect anything.
She wanted to make sure that you knew what happened, but she also wanted to make sure that when we told you, we said, she's okay, first thing. As it turned out, you called us.
Meg ran a hand through her hair.
So is she okay?
I think so. I haven't talked to her, but Frank has. And you remember how he is. He doesn't hide shit. He just says what the situation is. And he says she looks kind of beat up and swollen, and she's got cuts and gashes from flying debris. But her spirits are good. They're going to do an MRI and some other tests tonight to make sure nothing else is going on internally, especially with her head.
I'm so glad he's there.
Meg sank back into her chair, suddenly exhausted as the adrenaline she'd been running on since Sunday evening fizzled.
Definitely. Mom wanted to thank you again for calling. Which reminds me, you said you hadn't seen my email. How did you know to call? Or was it all a coincidence? You just decided to call for the hell of it?
Meg cleared her throat.
It's weird.
Can't be any weirder than this family, she encouraged.
She managed a little laugh. I had a dream Saturday night. It freaked me out and I had to call.
Mary was quiet for a long time.
A dream about Gina? She finally asked. What was it about?
I was trying to get to her out of a crowd of people. I was running through these streets
and when I finally got to where she was, I saw her shirt and... She cleared her throat again. Anyway, it freaked me out, and I needed to call. It was probably because I had watched the video she sent earlier.
Probably, Mary said, but she sounded skeptical. Anyway, at this point, we're waiting to find out what else they want to do to her at Ramstein, and when they're going to fly her home. They'll probably stabilize her there, and then she'll have more treatment in the States. I'll let you know what the schedule looks like.
That'd be great, thanks.
And not to make demands on you or anything, but do you think you might be able to come and visit her?
I hadn't thought that far ahead, but okay. I mean, Gina had mentioned that she was trying to get August off, and I said I'd try to visit, but then all this happened.
Well, if you can't make it this summer, it'd be great to have your company at Thanksgiving or Christmas. You're always welcome.
A knot tightened in Meg's stomach.
Just think about a visit, Mary said,
relieving her of further conversation about that. I will, and you should come and visit us at the ranch.
I might take you up on that, she said in a way that sounded like she was up to something. Okay, get back to vet stuff. Don't want to keep you too long.
That's all right. Thanks for calling me. Will you keep me posted?
Well, yeah. Do you want me to pass a message along to Gina?
Meg smiled. Tell her next time she wants a story, come to Wyoming. No tiramisu, but good steak. Mary laughed.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. She hung up and added Mary's number to her contacts on her phone before she slipped it back into its holder on her belt. Relaxed and enormously relieved, Gina was all right. She was a bit beat up, but she was okay, and that's all Meg cared about at the moment. Meg opened the back door for moonshine and glanced at the clock on her stove. Nearly 10, but it had been a nice change of pace to hang out with Sean and Ted. She checked her phone again and mentally scolded herself for acting like an addict with it, but found no new texts, so she checked her email too. Nothing from Gina's family. She sighed and stood looking at the moon, and it reminded her of a parking lot outside a bar in Saratoga 10 years ago. A flush shot down her thighs as she thought about that night, and the way Gina looked at her before Meg finally kissed her. Stop it, she muttered at the memories. They ignored her, and more thoughts of that first night with Gina filled her head. She let them, deciding that maybe she'd allow them to run their course. Gina was on her mind after all. Nothing weird about thinking about their past, but the images left her wanting much more than that. Her home phone rang, saving her from further rumination. She went to her office to answer it. The ID didn't register the caller, but she picked up anyway. Hello?
Meg, a male voice said on the other end. It's Frank.
Hey! Her heart sped up. Maybe Mary had told him to call her.
Hey yourself, Doc. How are you?
Good, thanks, she said, pleased at the good reception, all the way from Germany. So what's up? Everything okay?
With me, sure. Long stories for another time. I'm on the company's dime here. I'm calling because Gina wouldn't leave me alone until I did. Hold on.
Meg's breath caught in her throat, and she tried to calm her nerves, tried to stop the flood of emotion that surged through every conscious thought. But she knew it was futile, and she waited, buffeted, remembering the first time she ever laid eyes on Gina Morelli in the parking lot of Saratoga Feed.
Hiya, cowgirl,
came the familiar voice, and even slightly hoarse, its timbre fired every hope she pretended not to have. Hey, need some help? The words came automatically from the past. The first words she'd ever said to her, she watched Gina jacking the side of her Pathfinder up off the dirt. Gina exhaled softly.
Kind of a one-person job, she responded,
laughter in her tone, remembering what she'd said back.
But shit, I'll take whatever you want to give.
How are you? She asked, and Meg could hear excitement in her tone, and it made her ache like she did the first week she'd met her. Better than you, I think. And just what the hell did you think you were doing running toward a bomb? Gina chuckled, a sweet, throaty sound that Meg remembered too well.
That's why I get paid the big bucks.
Damn it, Gina. Don't fucking scare the shit out of me like that. She tried to keep her tone light and teasing, but she knew it was edged with the fear she had felt when Mary first told her what happened.
If I buy you lunch, will you forgive me?
and Meg melted into her sneakers, spread in a liquid pool over her floor, caught between past and present, remembering not to read anything into it, aware that Gina was just bantering, just teasing. I might. Maybe more than one lunch, though. Hell, it might take a lifetime of lasagna, actually. I'll expect monthly packages. Gina laughed. Damn, she exclaimed. It is so good to talk to you. I have missed you. Don't, Meg thought. Please don't say things like that to me. I'm in a vulnerable place. But she liked the way it sounded. Liked how it felt so right and so good to hear things like that from her, even though they hadn't spoken for 5 years. I've missed you too, and yes, I will like so be your like friend, she said in a Valley Girl accent that made Gina laugh a little harder. Ow, I'm a little sore in this end. Go easy on me, she managed. Meg derailed the lecherous thought Gina's words evoked. So, give me the rundown on your injuries. Do I have to use big anatomical words? Knee bone connected to the leg bone will suffice? Come on, I'm a doctor after all. True, all right. I've got numerous contusions. Gina emphasized contusions, putting an inflection on it, like a child might in an attempt to pronounce it correctly. Meg smiled. All over hell and gone. I also have a lot of nicks and cuts from glass and whatever else might have been flying around, and a couple of more serious gashes in my right arm and left leg. Those are all stitched up, but they look kind of scary. I ended up getting slammed against a car, my left side. A yellow Citroën, if you must know. I have 2 bruised ribs and a really sore shoulder, but they don't see anything that won't heal okay. Meg forced the thought of Gina slammed against anything out of her head. Can you breathe without pain? For the most part, there's discomfort, but I'm breathing normally. I have a hard time taking a deep breath, so I'm trying to be mellow. No singing for a while. That sucks. They're sure your ribs aren't broken? Yeah. X-rayed and checked over and MRI'd everywhere. Do you think those medical words are sexy when I say them? Meg heard the smile through the phone, all the way from Europe. You have no fucking idea. But in the back of her mind, she wondered, was Gina flirting with her? And wasn't that a little weird? I'm impressed, she responded, deciding not to think about that. And I have a nice big lump and gash on the left side of my head. They had to shave a bit of my hair off to clean that out. I wasn't knocked out, but there might be a concussion. They're keeping an eye on that. Meg grimaced. I caught a piece of flying glass with my forehead, which put a nice cut across my left eyebrow. It's all stitched up. Frank says I look like Frankenstein. He's such a pal. So what's next? Observation. Making sure I'm okay. They're monitoring me to make sure nothing's weird in my head. Well, weirder than usual. Meg laughed. So far, so good. But I can't really do much because I'm sore as hell. Well, shit. That about sums it up. God, I missed that. You sounded like your dad just then, too. How is he?
He says to tell you hi. I told him what happened, and he's getting a care package together to ship to your folks. Alice is baking some of her cookies. I hope your mom saves some for you.
And speaking of moms, she groaned.
Don't go there. I'll tell you about it later.
I'd like that, Gina said softly, to talk to you later.
Meg closed her eyes, felt the past lodge in her throat, and she leaned against the wall, imagining for just a moment that Gina pinned her there. Dark eyes sparking with desire, the sound of Meg's zipper as Gina undid it, a pleasant accompaniment to the breath rasping between her lips. Same here, Meg responded, pleased that her voice betrayed nothing beyond sincerity. Gina muttered something and sighed with frustration.
Shit, Frank's giving me the cut it short look. All right, cowgirl, thanks for talking. Somebody will let you know when I'm on my way back to the States. If not me, somebody else in my large and varied family will annoy you. Sadly, my phone was a goner, but I'll have somebody keep you posted.
Meg smiled. Yes, please keep me in the loop. I about went crazy here wondering what happened and if you were okay. And I'm serious. Please try not to pull this shit again.
I'll do my best. I can't say I've enjoyed it enough for a repeat performance, she said dryly. Take care, cowgirl. I'll catch you later.
Definitely. Bye.
Bye.
The line went dead. but Meg felt like whooping, like yelling, like running down Grand Avenue, hollering at the top of her lungs. Instead, she grinned so wide it felt like it might split her face. Gina. She had talked to Gina, and it felt so natural. Like they talked all the time, like there weren't miles and years that separated them. She caught herself, Sharon. That put a damper on her enthusiasm, but she shook it off. Gina was alive and she was coming back to the States, and that's what was important. Plus, she said she had missed her, so she'd live on that. Humans are amazingly resilient creatures after all. Gina would always have a place in her heart, reserved only for her. The realization left her a little sad because Gina was unavailable. Still, it didn't really matter because something had shifted within her, and the lonely barrier she'd built over the past 8 years crumbled a little. She went to lock the back door and get Moonshine settled for the night. Tomorrow was a long day on the road doing rounds, but she was looking forward to it because she'd heard from Gina and she'd come to a place of acceptance with regard to her, finally. So she'd carry a torch. And maybe someday she'd be tired of that. But she'd ford that river when she got to it. She got ready for bed and slid between her sheets. Moonshine was already snoring softly from his doggy bed. She set the alarm and turned out the light. Chapter 14. A few minutes after 6:30 the next morning, Meg arrived at the clinic's back parking lot. Haley was already there, leaning against the tailgate of her Ranger talking on a cell phone. She was wearing faded Wranglers, brown ropers, and a University of Wyoming t-shirt, and again, she reminded Meg of herself 10 years ago. Meg pulled into a spot and went around to the passenger side for Moonshine. She set him on the ground, and he headed right over to visit with Haley while Meg transferred a few things to the vet truck. Haley waved at her half-heartedly, and Meg waved back, wondering again what she might be dealing with. She unlocked the back door and entered so she could check in with Ginny. "Hey, it's me," she called out as she entered the main lobby. "Hi," Ginny said as she put a filter in the lobby's coffee machine. "Is Haley here?" "Yeah, up back. She's on the phone." Meg checked her pocket schedule against the main offices. "Next time, tell her to come and knock and I'll let her in." "Yeah, I forgot," Meg said, glancing up. Ginny scooped coffee grounds into the filter basket. "She enjoyed going on rounds with you on Tuesday." "Oh? Did you ply her with cake or something to talk?" Ginny switched the machine on. "Didn't need to." "Well, I'm glad she's able to talk to somebody around here." Meg smiled at her and put the clipboard back where Ginny liked to keep it. "I think I might scare her a little. Not sure why." "No, you don't. She just admires you, and she wants to make sure she doesn't screw up." Meg shrugged. "Everybody screws up. And from what I've seen of her, I don't think she'd screw anything up deliberately. She's a ranch kid. We're all burdened with responsibility from birth. It's a curse." Ginny brushed her hands on her scrub pants and returned to the counter. "I have a confession to make." Meg looked over the counter, puzzled. "About?" "Jack Roberts, Haley's father, was a friend of mine." "Ah," Meg said. "That explains why you didn't need cake to get her to talk to you." She slid her schedule back into her pocket. "And it explains this intern situation," she smiled. "But I'm guessing you have other ulterior motives." Ginny sighed.
"I do. Trent and I helped Laura, that's Haley's mother, quite a bit after Jack died, until she married Bill." She came around the counter. "Things changed. Bill's not a good man. He's not even a good person. But Jack's death took a lot out of Laura, and she's been lost ever since. When Haley was 11, her brother was already in college, and her sister was graduating from high school, which left Haley at home. I told Laura that Trent and I would be glad to keep her in town for school," she frowned. "It was clear Bill didn't care much for the kids, but for whatever reason, he focused a lot of whatever ails him on Haley."
Meg remained quiet.
"Bill refused our offer, and Laura went along with it."
"Is he physically abusive?"
"I don't know. I never saw evidence of it on Laura or Haley. Still don't when I see Laura. But that doesn't mean anything. She might cover it up." I told Laura that if I found out Bill had touched Haley in any way, I'd make his life a living hell.
Ginny's tone was cold and hard, like the flat side of a knife.
And I told Laura that Haley was more than welcome to stay with us. But if she wouldn't let Haley go, then she'd better make damn sure the decisions she made as a mother didn't spill onto her daughter.
She put her hands on her hips.
Haley found ways, while she was growing up, to come to town. She'd say she had a school trip or was spending the night with friends. We'd pick her up at the feed store or the school or some such after a friend would drop her off and Laura would cover for her.
Meg bit back a curse to keep from interrupting.
We'd see her once or twice a month, and I told her if things got too bad to call me or Trent and we'd come get her. Bill and her mother be damned.
She made a disgusted tsk noise.
But Haley wouldn't leave Laura alone too long because she said that sometimes Bill did get violent. But as long as Haley was around, he wouldn't get too bad. He'd just yell a lot, which was bad enough.
Did he try anything with Haley? Meg wasn't talking about physical abuse. She clenched her hands into fists.
She says he didn't,
Jenny said, clearly picking up on what Meg was asking.
But then Haley always slept with dogs in the room.
Her expression softened.
She has a way with animals. Bill doesn't. Both Haley and Laura told me that the dogs didn't like Bill, and he stayed clear of them. From the time he got there, Haley always had a dog with her.
She looked up at Meg.
Smart cookie.
So when did she get out?
Right after she graduated from high school. She doesn't talk much about it. But apparently, Bill told her that her time was up at the house.
He kicked her out.
Yes. She had already been accepted to the university, and it would have helped her quite a bit to live at home. But she was able to move in with her sister, who was still in Laramie then. She started at the university after that. But it's been rough going for her. She's had to take a couple semesters off here and there to work. Her scholarships don't cover everything.
Why didn't you just tell me this up front?
I didn't want you to think Haley was a charity case. She's not. She worked her ass off to get where she is now. She's got away with animals, Meg. But she's not so good with people. And I think she needs someone like you to help her settle down about that.
Meg raised an eyebrow. You're saying I'm good with people? How long have you worked with me now? Ginny chuckled.
I also figured you might pick up on something else about her.
She put a particular emphasis on else. That she rides the same side of the fence that I do?
Yes. I saw it coming when she was a kid. So did Trent. She told me when she was 16 and she thought something god-awful was wrong with her because she had a crush on a girl at school and she didn't know how to stop feeling that way. Broke my heart to see her in such emotional turmoil about something that she can't help.
Meg knew only too well how that felt. What did you tell her?
Ginny gave her a what-do-you-think look. That there was nothing wrong with her, but there was a hell of a lot wrong with the rest of the world, and sadly, she'd have to keep some things private for a while, until she figured out how to deal with them and anything she needed. All she had to do was call.
Meg's throat tightened, and she remembered the day 20 years ago when a couple of rancher kids beat the hell out of one of her high school classmates because they suspected he was gay. He showed up at school on Monday looking like he'd gone a few rounds with a boxer. Meg asked him what happened, and he said he'd fallen off a horse. But Meg checked around and found out differently. The next year, he left school to live with his grandmother in Cheyenne, and Meg kept her mouth shut about her own feelings until long after she graduated. She pulled Ginny into a hug.
I wish the world had more people like you. Then all the Haleys of the world wouldn't have to go through so much shit beyond the usual growing up crap.
She released her.
I'll see what I can do, but it's up to Haley. What she decides to talk about and what she doesn't.
She'll tell you,
Ginny said with a mysterious little smile. Meg smiled back. We'll see.
You have a way about you with people, though you don't see it.
Glad you seem to think so. And thanks for talking the other night. I'm glad you let me know what's going on.
Meg shrugged.
You were right. Sometimes it helps. There's been another development, too.
Oh?
I talked to Gina last night.
And?
I'm glad I was able to talk to her. She sounds pretty good. She's got lots of cuts and bruises, including some bruised ribs and probably a concussion. But she sounded all right in spite of that. I think I needed to hear that from her.
Ginny nodded.
Is she coming back to the States?
Yes, not sure when.
Maybe you should schedule a visit.
Meg shrugged. We'll see. She has a lot of recuperating to do. She tried to sound neutral about it, but she saw from Ginny's expression that it hadn't worked.
See you when you get back if it's not too late,
Ginny said, and Meg was relieved that she hadn't pushed the visit issue.
Yeah. Meg started to leave but turned and looked at her. Thanks for the confidence.
She waved and returned to the parking lot where Haley was petting Moonshine near the big vet truck. Meg unlocked the passenger door, and Haley picked Moonshine up and put him on the seat. She climbed in and buckled up before shutting the door. Meg got into the driver's side and started the engine. She looked over at Haley and deduced something had upset her by the set of her jaw.
Morning,
she said innocuously as she put the truck into reverse. Haley nodded at her and stared straight ahead, right elbow braced on the ledge of the passenger door against the side window.
You up for some pre-rounds coffee?
Meg asked as she turned right onto third. Haley looked over at her.
Yeah.
Meg pulled into the parking lot of the Third Street Starbucks.
Regular, or do you want one of those super fancy schmancy drinks?
Haley finally cracked a little smile.
Just regular.
Okay, so come in with me. Get a pastry or something. We'll go wild. Vet's gone wild. She winked and opened her door. Haley followed, looking like a shy teenager. Meg bought her a Starbucks medium, which was actually more coffee than Meg could drink in a day, along with a piece of cinnamon crumb cake. She got a cinnamon roll for herself and a small Americano coffee. They took a table near the window, and Meg bit into her roll. She chewed and swallowed before saying anything.
I found some more stuff on VSV, and also on Foot and Mouth. Recent articles. I'll print them out for you when we get done today, so you can add them to your collection.
Haley took a drink of coffee before responding.
Thanks,
she said simply, keeping her attention on her pastry. She took a bite and then picked at a couple of crumbs on the paper plate. Meg remained impassive and took a drink of her coffee, giving her the space she needed to either talk about what was on her mind or not.
Do you get out to the Diamond Rock much?
Haley asked suddenly. Meg swallowed before answering.
Yep, quite a bit. So you still have family there?
Haley kept her eyes on her plate. My dad, and some of the hands have been there long enough to be family. Our chef has been there almost 20 years. I consider her family.
Do you have sisters or brothers?
No. Meg picked her coffee cup up and looked out the window across the parking lot as the morning light shifted in the warming air. She'd let Haley guide this conversation.
What about your mom?
Kentucky. Meg gave her a wry smile. And we don't really get along. Haley took another bite from her cake and chewed. She swallowed.
I don't really get along with my stepdad, she said softly.
That's rough, Meg said. My mom left when I was 16. It was hard. But when I was 21, she and I really stopped seeing eye to eye. And by the time I was 25, things were pretty tense. They're better now because we pretty much ignore each other. And it helps, actually, that she's not here. Haley took a drink from her coffee cup.
My stepdad is... She sighed and dropped her gaze. He's an asshole,
she explained, matter of fact.
My dad died when I was 8, and my mom remarried when I was 10. I'm the youngest of 3.
Where are your siblings?
My brother's in Houston and my sister's in Denver. They left as soon as they could because Bill's such an asshole.
Do you see him much?
No, not since I had to leave home. He pretty much told me to get out right after I graduated from high school, so I moved into town with my sister. I'm really sorry to hear that happened, but I'm glad you had somewhere to go.
Haley drummed her fingers nervously on the tabletop.
My mom calls in the morning sometimes when he leaves the house and tells me when she's coming to town to visit. He doesn't know she does that, and he doesn't ask about me.
Don't ask, don't tell, she said wryly.
He'd be pissed if he knew she was still helping me.
Meg sipped her coffee. The phone call this morning was probably Haley's mother. When's the last time you saw your mom?
2 weeks ago. She brings me groceries and leaves me a little bit of money when she can. She keeps her money separate from his, which is probably a good thing.
Meg made a sympathetic noise and took another bite of her roll.
How come you and your mom don't get along? Haley asked.
Meg regarded her, not surprised at the question. Lots of reasons. I'm not the daughter she wanted. I'm a lot like my dad, and my dad drove her crazy. Haley didn't respond, but she kept her gaze on Meg's.
And my mom can't accept that I'm gay.
Meg said it as if she was talking about any other mundane matter, no particular emphasis. She let it hang in the air between them and took another bite of her cinnamon roll. Haley dropped her gaze and fiddled with her cake, though her shoulders relaxed.
That's another reason Bill doesn't like me. He's never really liked me anyway, but he found out about me just before I graduated from high school, and it's pretty much sucked even worse since then. He's all into religion, and he goes to a really conservative church.
Your mom knows about you? Meg asked.
Yeah, and she likes Beth. That's my partner,
Haley said, though Meg had figured that.
It was hard on her at first, Haley continued, but she's managing. Beth's really smart, and she's funny and nice, and
her expression softened. Meg saw herself 10 years earlier talking about Gina to her friends.
It's really hard not to like her,
Haley added. Sounds like it. She glanced up at Meg.
Does your dad know?
Yep. I came out to him before I came out to my mom. He had a hard time too at first, but he's come a long way, and we're pretty tight.
When did you?
Haley cleared her throat, uncomfortable.
I'm sorry. That's a personal question.
Meg smiled. I came out to my dad when I was 22. Like I said, he had a hard time. We didn't really talk much about it until I turned 25. I came out to my mom when I was 24. She was not happy. In fact, I have to come out to her at least once a year because she's constantly trying to set me up with guys. Haley's eyes widened.
For real?
Meg shook her head with a God help me expression.
Yep.
She hauled this poor guy out to the ranch last week for my birthday. Fortunately, he and I had a little chat and were on the same page. He had already figured things out and had other things he needed to do out here. But here's the juicy part. He's engaged. Meg grinned and took another drink of coffee. Haley stared at her.
Then why does your mom think?
Long story. He's a white southerner. His dad's racist, and his fiancée is black. Haley sat for a moment.
Does his dad even know then?
No. Hardly anybody knows except his close friends and her family. His father's probably going to disown him when he finds out, so Phil, that's his name, and his fiancée are moving to Denver. He's got some business ventures he's doing, and she's going to law school. As soon as his father finds out, that'll be it for him and any inheritance, and his family's extremely wealthy. Haley seemed to be digesting that.
Damn, and here I thought being gay was hard.
Her appetite seemed to return, and she took another bite of cake. It is. It's just that there are people out there with similar issues. Their families don't like who they love. Meg finished her roll. Life is hard enough without shit like that to deal with. But people always seem to want to make it harder on each other. She looked across the table, into Haley's eyes. And for a moment, Meg saw herself at 24, settling into her skin as best she could, walking thin lines between denial and acceptance. I'm sorry your stepdad is an asshole, Meg said. I know what it's like to have a parent who just can't deal with who you are. Some days my mom frustrates the hell out of me. Other days I feel sorry for her. Most days I just don't think about it because she's not really been part of my life for a long time. It wasn't easy getting to this point, and she can still piss me off. But you have to live true to yourself, and sometimes it's just not easy. She pushed back from the table. If you need to talk about things like that, just give me a call. We'll go have coffee. She grinned and stood. And now, future Dr. Haley, let's go mess around with some large animals. Chapter 15.
Hey, Dr. Horsechick,
Sean said when Meg answered.
I want the details about this phone call from Germany.
Meg laughed. Yeah, I figured a text wouldn't do it. She pushed back a little from her desk so she could put her feet up.
You can only put so much in a text. So what happened? I have my popcorn ready.
Last night the phone rang. I answered it.
Oh, you stoic rancher types. Don't make me drive up there, woman.
Meg laughed again. As appealing as that is, all right. It was Frank. He called to put Gina on the phone. And it just occurred to me that it was probably 5 in the morning there.
Well, he's on military time. Probably up for reveille or whatever they have to do. So, how'd she sound?
Meg stared at the ceiling for a few seconds. And Gina's all-too-familiar greeting echoed in her mind. Sparks shot up her spine.
I'll take that as a good,
Sean said with a laugh.
Yes, she sounded good. Maybe a little tired. Spill it. Injury list.
Bruised ribs and a possible concussion are the worst of it. Lots of cuts and other bruises, too. Some needed stitches. She said she was really sore. I'm sure this whole thing has worn her out.
Well, not like she hasn't been busy. Or up at 5 a.m. to talk to ex-girlfriends, Sean said, injecting extra innocence into her tone.
And you're implying what, exactly?
That you're in the throes of some kind of weird retro crush.
A what?
An attraction to your past.
Meg started to retort, but sighed instead because Sean was right.
Yeah, okay. Whatever. I told you I was going to deal with it. I know. So how do you feel? You haven't talked to her in a few years.
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm resigned to the attraction thing. I've always been attracted to her. But I've had crushes in the past and nothing came of them. So I think that's how I'm going to treat this.
Mm-hmm,
Sean said in a way that meant she was skeptical.
What? I know you've thought some of this through. I know you think you're in an okay place with it, but it's different when you're dealing with an abstract. You talk to her. She's not an abstraction anymore. And you can't just stick her in the file labeled past. She's now part of your present.
Meg frowned. She kind of has been for a bit. We've been emailing. And she sent the video. So I already knew what she sounded like before she called. She was getting defensive and she knew that she was proving Sean's point.
Fuck, she said with a sigh. I'm sorry. I don't mean to sound shitty. But I do, don't I?
Sean chuckled.
Yes, you do. Care to elaborate?
Meg ran a hand through her hair and went out back. Moonshine was snoozing on the patio. He looked up at her, probably wondering if she had a treat for him. When he saw she didn't, he put his head back down on the concrete and continued his nap.
You're right, Meg said. She's not an abstraction anymore, and I don't know what that means or how I feel about it. What I can say is I don't feel bad. I just feel kind of cautious, I guess.
She opted not to tell Sean how she'd reacted when she'd hung up with Gina.
And?
Clearly Sean wasn't buying it, and Meg sighed again.
Okay. I was a little excited after the phone call. I mean, I hadn't talked to her directly in years. And I'll admit it, well, it felt pretty good.
She stared up at the sky. It had felt damn good.
There, she said after a few more moments. Happy now?
Honey, I'm not trying to back you into a corner. I just want you to really think about what you're doing and to be honest with yourself. There's nothing wrong with being excited about her or feeling crushed out or attracted. Just acknowledge that you are so you can deal with that in a healthy way.
Especially since she has a girlfriend. Meg finished silently for her.
I hope that I'm doing that. And if I'm not, I'll just call you and you'll smack me around a little.
She smiled as she said it and went back into the kitchen to get a glass of iced tea. She then returned to the living room, where she set her tea on the coffee table and flopped onto the couch.
Damn right, but in a loving way. Okay, moving along. How was your ride along?
Sean was eating something. It sounded like an apple.
Give me more gossip on your intern.
Meg almost exhaled in relief that Sean changed the subject.
The ride along was good. She's sharp.
She was born in Laramie too, so we share that bond. She's heard of the DR and I told her she's welcome to come and visit. Meg stretched her legs out on her couch. Moonshine wandered in and climbed up on the couch with her. She rolled her eyes and moved her feet so he could settle in.
You think she's got it?
Sean took another bite and crunched in Meg's ear.
That's so sexy when you do that, Meg said with a laugh. Nothing like a woman smacking her lips in my ear.
I'll bet you say that a lot,
Sean retorted before she swallowed.
So does she?
I think she does. She's very calm and quiet.
Uh-oh. Better not get her around us then.
Sean took a drink of something. I think it just takes her a while to warm up to people. I'm like that. Sean was quiet for a few moments, chewing.
True. You were kind of reserved when I first met you. Must be a Wyoming ranching thing. Y'all are just these stoic, quiet cow people.
Cow people?
That sounds like some kind of scary tribe. Run, it's the cow people. Hide the hay.
She sat up and reached for her iced tea. Sean snorted, laughing.
I was trying to be inclusive. You most definitely are not a cowboy. You are, however, a hot-ass cowgirl, or should I say cowwoman?
Cow chick.
I like that. Almost as much as I like calling you Dr. Horse Chick. So what else about her? Will you bring her down to Fort Collins?
I think I will.
She's very good with animals and very comfortable with horses and cows. She seems to enjoy talking to people, and she listens when they tell her things.
Do you remember that guy? What the hell was his name? We called him Mr. Clueless.
Meg took a drink of tea.
Oh my God, John Breck? He was such an ass.
Totally. He wouldn't ever let anybody get a word in. And when you're dealing with sick animals, you have to let the caretakers and the owners tell you what's up. They know their livestock. They know. Haley listened. Really listened. Not only to what they said, but also to what might be between what they were saying. I'm telling you, if she goes on with this, she'll be good. I'll sponsor her through the state program if she wants to end up in Wyoming.
How old is she? Sean asked.
24. She wants to apply to vet schools next year, and I told her I'd help her.
Meg thought about Haley for a bit.
She reminds me of myself, I think. Maybe that's the other thing. That and she's on her way to hell with me.
Shut up. She's special like you?
Yes. Meg set her glass back down on the coffee table.
Did she say anything?
Yes, she told me.
And how exactly did this come up?
Sean said in a do-tell tone.
Well, I had a convo with Ginny before Haley and I went on rounds.
Meg filled her in on what Ginny had said. So after that, I took Haley to coffee, and we chatted a little about family, and she admitted she doesn't get along with her stepdad, and I said I don't get along with my mom. She asked why. I told her.
Secret lesbian conversational cues. Fascinating.
Meg laughed. Yeah, whatever. She admitted that part of why her stepdad doesn't like her is because she's gay.
Does her mom know?
Yeah, and her mom apparently likes her partner. Though her stepdad is not keen on Haley talking to her mom.
Asshole.
Big time.
Well, you just got all the gossip. Does this partner have a name?
Beth.
Haley and Beth. That's cute. That could be a really cute lesbian sitcom.
I'll ask if she wants to star as herself, Meg said wryly.
Well, regardless, you'll be an awesome role model for her.
Sean took another bite and chewed for a while.
Tell you what, Sean said between chews. See if she'd be into spending some time down here with me. We've got a pretty busy practice, and it can get hectic. Not to suggest you don't have anything going on up there, but it might help give her more perspective on what she wants to do and specialize in.
I gave her your card and told her you just might be willing to take her on for a day. She seemed to like that idea. Now that I have the official okay, I'll encourage her to call you.
Cool. I get to be a mentor to another lost lesbian, Sean said.
Wait a sec. I'm a lost lesbian?
Not anymore, because I've been your mentor,
Meg laughed. So I'm no longer lost.
Maybe a little. I think you won't need me much more,
she said with a woe-is-me inflection.
What with your past showing up and distracting you?
That is such bullshit. I'll always need you.
You'd better, Sean teased. And I'll always need you. I mean, who the hell else in my life looks so damn good in boots and jeans? Well, besides George.
George? I'm up there with George Strait? Meg chuckled at Sean's celebrity crush.
Yep. If I travel the lesbian road, I'd be all over you like Mooney on brisket.
Sean took another bite. Meg could hear her chewing. Lesbian road? So it's a road now? Shit, don't tell my mom. She'll think you just need to turn off somewhere to go back to Hetville.
And how is Irene?
Probably convinced Phil is pining away for me. I haven't heard from her since my birthday.
Girl, she's like a caricature of herself. Bless her little old heart,
Meg sighed. She's something, that's for sure. She stroked Moonshine's head. He grunted with contentment.
And so are you, but in a much better way. Okay, I'm going to go bother Ted for a while.
I'm sure he'll appreciate that. Tell him hi for me.
I always do. Talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks for kicking my ass, she snorted.
Please. That was just a little love tap. You'll know it if I really kick your ass.
I have no doubt, she said with a grin. Later.
Bye.
Meg hung up and leaned back against the couch, still petting Moonshine. Sean was right. She did have a weird retro crush. And as much as she thought she had accepted it, she needed to be careful and not let it color her judgment. Gina wanted to be her friend. That's it. And maybe someday they'd be able to talk about the past, and loss wouldn't wrap around her heart like a winter's night. She got up and took her glass into the kitchen.
Hey, Mary?
Meg answered.
Yep. How are you? How's Gina?
She retreated to the back to talk, out of the way of techs and vets, near the back door to the clinic.
We're all fine. Gina's scheduled to fly back to the States Wednesday. Her boss wants her to stay put at Ramstein for a few more days to make sure everything's okay. One of the other reporters who wasn't badly injured will be flying with her. He's meeting her in London.
That's good. Then they'll go to New York and on to LA?
No, New York to Sacramento.
He'll fly on to LA after that.
Sounds like a plan.
We're guessing she's going to be really tired when she first gets here. But I'll keep you posted on everything. Mom's already lined up doctor checkups for her.
Meg smiled. Good, I know she hates that. But I'm glad you guys are all there to make her do it.
I talked to her yesterday, and she's taking some time off from work. It sounds like a month, maybe. She sounded fine with that.
That's great. Meg chewed her lip, undecided about her next words.
Do you think it'd be okay if I came out to visit after, well, after she's had a couple weeks to adjust and get some more healing in?
She kicked herself immediately. Why was that even a good idea when she had this weird retro crush or whatever it was?
When? Mary sounded hopeful, and Meg's gut clenched more. But she forged ahead, driven by something she didn't fully understand.
I don't know. Whatever you think is about right. I don't want to visit when she's still in a lot of pain, so maybe a couple of weeks after she gets home?
I'd come in on a Thursday and leave on Sunday.
I think Gina would love a visit, Mary said, animated. I know the rest of the family would appreciate it, too.
Should I go ahead and make a reservation for 2 weeks from Wednesday, then?
Tell you what, wait till she gets back to the States and we have a clearer idea of what's going on.
Okay, I'll wait till I hear from you.
Cool,
Mary said.
I'll totally be in touch.
Great, thanks for calling.
Sure, and Meg?
Yeah?
Thanks.
She hung up before Meg could respond, and Meg put her phone back in her belt holder, wondering why Mary had thanked her.
Hey, Doc, Anna said from the doorway into the lobby. Your 3 o'clock's here. Mrs. Jefferson and Blue, room 2?
Okay, is Haley done with Roy?
Yes, we have her up front. I'll send her back.
Thanks. She looked over at Michelle. Do the initial check-in with Mrs. Jefferson and Blue. Let Haley shadow you.
Okay,
she said as Haley entered.
Doc,
Haley said. Got a senior dog in room 2 in for his checkup. Observe Michelle.
Yes, ma'am.
She went with Michelle.